Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private paid therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey, what's up? Welcome to session 36 of the Selling the Couch podcast. Hope you're having a fantastic week. Before we get started, by the time that this episode goes live, we will have passed the 25,000 download mark. It is just so surreal to think about how and where this podcast has gone. You know, when I launched back in March on the first day, I had 10 downloads and I think then like 40 downloads on the second day. And it's just so crazy to see that the podcast continues to grow. And now it's averaging, I think, close to something like 1500 or 1600 downloads a week. And I am just so grateful for you for taking the time to listen, for believing in me, and just, yeah, I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say other than just thank you. Thank you so much for trusting in me with your time and just for all the time that you've given me and the encouragement that you've given me along the way. Today's podcast session is actually all about making that transition from being a clinician to being a trainer, specifically for some sort of a theoretical orientation, whether that is CBT or ACT or emotion-focused therapy, whatever that is. My guest is Dr. Rebecca Jorgensen. Rebecca was in private practice for several years and now is one of the most sought-after experts in the area of emotion-focused therapy. She actually travels all around the world to teach other clinicians to do EFT. And Rebecca is a podcasting friend, and we've connected actually at Podcast Movement. It was the first time that we got to meet each other, and it was just so much fun. We got to grab lunch and just catch up, and it was like we had long friendship, even though we had never met each other. We'd primarily been communicating via email and Facebook. So one of the many things that you'll learn today is how to make that transition from just being a clinician to actually being a trainer and what all of that entails. We'll talk about some of the ways that Rebecca realized that she wanted to be a trainer and some of the lessons that she's learned along the way. There's just a ton of really great information, so I'll get right to it. So here is my conversation with Dr. Rebecca Jorgensen from RebeccaJorgensen.com. Hey, Becca, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, it's finally nice to connect and get this interview done.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I have as well. I feel like I'm pretty excited for our conversation. And one of the first things that I wanted to ask you was, what was it about emotion-focused therapy that you most connected with?
So emotionally focused therapy that I most connected with, well, there's a couple major components of it that just rang so true to me that I became passionate about. And it's working with emotion, but working with emotion in relation to relationship and system. So you can see all of these things working together. And then the research, like the outcome, that it really makes a difference in couple therapy and in therapy in general, individual therapy, family therapy. So the sense of seeing organizing elements, having them all put together in a system that worked and seeing it be successful just lit me on fire. I came away from an initial training totally passionate about, I have to help the world know about emotionally focused therapy.
Yeah, I actually remember the first time I got connected with emotionally focused therapy. It was in grad school, and it was one of my grad school professors. He's also done some trainings with Sue Johnson, and I had a very similar reaction. When you think about relationship, right, and sort of the multiple levels of it, and seeing it like in a theoretical model, it's very cool, you know, in a nerdy sort of way.
Yeah, it was totally like all my nerd brain excitement elements to see systems and understand the organizing elements and understand myself, my own relationships, and be able to have that be applicable to my life experience, to my clients. And it also really put together why I was having difficulty helping couples, which is such a common experience for therapists who are general therapists. And really, we're taught in school that you could kind of help anybody with here's some basic principles. And then you try to apply those principles to couples and it just doesn't work. And we know that from research that it doesn't really work, you know. So yeah. To want to help and then not being helpful is a pretty painful thing for a therapist. So it kind of resolved my own desire to help, seeing systems, getting on the leading edge of these elements that came all together. And I just walked away with this passion, like, I have to help the world understand this message. Part of the context for that for me was that I think I was the only person in my whole state who had ever heard of Sue Johnson. So
wow.
I also was pretty alone in receiving this very exciting message and thought, how could people not know this? Like, this is just too great. How could people not know this? So I totally walked away excited and went right back to my university where I was in the counseling department and teaching and started organizing peer consultation groups and speaking to local associations and statewide associations. I just like was on fire about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's such a difference, right? When we have a passion for something and to be able to pursue it, like it's a much more sincere way. And you can tell when we have a passion for something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was thinking most of us, I think, in the field have some sort of specialized training, especially after grad school and have some years of working, whether it's CBT, EFT, whatever it is. But I think a lot of times people struggle with this idea of, okay, I know that I can employ this with clients, but teaching other clinicians to do that, I don't know if I'm quite there and quite ready to do that. How do you think you overcame that struggle, like internal struggle?
Well, that's really interesting. I maybe didn't have that. I know I had some struggle around it, but I was already teaching. Mm. So I had been in university environments teaching, doing adjunct teaching and teaching. And really, I started teaching when I was a youth, like when I was 12 or 13, I started teaching 2 and 3 year olds in little classes related to church. So I had kind of teacher training for a very long time. So putting like finding a body of knowledge and breaking it down into elements and desiring to teach it, there was always a part of me that loved to teach and wanted to teach and had some skill at it because I'd had very early training. Mm. But with teaching therapists, a form of therapy, especially something that when I started was kind of not as accepted as it is these days, like attachment theory was still controversial and or unknown, and our need for others and that we're social beings, all of that wasn't as in the environment as it is now. So that part of resistance and meeting up with objections, you know, I had to kind of learn. That would have been my struggle, I think, is learning how to meet up to objections and work with resistance in a large group, in a crowd.
So you're saying like when other therapists who've had a certain framework or theoretical mm-hmm. orientation, they would be like, Becca, what are you talking about? Kind of.
Yes. Yeah. Or you'd be standing in front of 100 therapists doing a presentation on emotionally focused therapy. And they'd say, well, yeah, but this framework says this, or this one says that. And all these questions and fears would kind of come up in the room. And So learning how to do that was the new part, because when you're teaching a university or teaching Sunday school or something like that, people are there raising their hand. You know, I want to be here. Mm-hmm. I'm open. I'm learning. And though, even though people would pay to come to these courses to be taught, it was interesting the way objections would surface. So learning how to handle resistance and objections when you're teaching in a group and you're in front of everyone and you're the one that's on the spot to have a response, I think, was the difficult thing for me.
How did you actually do that, like initially? Because I imagine that would definitely be a struggle for me, right? Yeah, how did you even get started with doing that, like initially, when you had that first or second person who stood up and was like, you know, while I do this?
Yeah, well, how did I learn how to do that? I think from psychology and from work with clients, I had this belief that I still hold, and it's the humanistic belief, you know, that people are doing the best that they know how, and that what people have to say is important. And so I wanted to privilege those questions. And then I had this uncomfortability inside of myself around, oh, am I doing a good enough job, or can they accept what I have to say? I want to be heard too. I think what I was able to do was value what they had to say, value their question, try to understand where the question was coming from, and then know my stuff well enough that I could actually reply to the question. And so at first, when I didn't necessarily know the answers, all of the answers, because there were new objections that I'd meet up to, then I would take those, I'd pay attention to that, I'd listen to my audience and go back and study and kind of figure out where those objections were coming from and how I could meet them. So a lot of it had to do with preparation and also valuing their voice, paying attention to them. And in the moment, I knew not to like argue from the stage, you know, with them.
Right,
so
right.
I knew to say, I don't know the answer to that. Let me come back to you, or let's hold on to that question. I developed one of my colleagues, I think I learned this from one of them, who had what they called a parking lot. So that particular questions, right? We would park particular questions. So if there was something that I particularly didn't know how to respond to, I would just say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. And I'd park it. I'd try to get back to them. And then ones that it maybe I would self-evaluate or look at evaluations after as well. I wanted to be really good at what I did as well. So paying attention to what people have to say in their reviews. And then also inside of myself, you know, what part was really hard for me that I couldn't quite roll with, or maybe I got a little, I don't know, snappy's probably too strong, you know, like, I don't like that question. I would never say something like that. But there's ways that we can respond that shut people down, even though the verbal response isn't outwardly shutting them down. So I would feel that inside of myself when I felt threatened in some sort of a way. I'd go back to that after those events and try to sort what that was so that I could be more present to receive and respond.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of like having a really tough client, one that's like confronting you right there in that moment, right? Like, so how do you see them as human, right? How do you see their concern as valid, all the while still recognizing like your own internal process? I mean, I guess the biggest thing I hear is that in this process of becoming a trainer, it has really been this process of you growing and you figuring out who you are and becoming, I think, ultimately more self-aware.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. The whole process of becoming a trainer, doing coaching, doing supervision, helping others in a variety of way to grow their skill and their self-awareness is certainly on the path of taking care of my own, knowing my own mindset, knowing what's happening for me, my own experience, so I can be more congruent and complete and present. Emotionally focused therapy is all about, Sue Johnson talks about accessibility, responsiveness, and engagement. And so I really look about at that as a parallel process to what we do in therapy. And then holding a group is kind of similar, a little bit different with a whole large group, but there's a parallel process. And to be accessible, responsive, and engaged with your audience is always really important for connection and safety. And people learn better. We all learn better when we're in a safe environment, in a holding environment, when we're being responded to. And so as a trainer, as a presenter, as a speaker, I want that connection with my audience. So that means I have to be in a pretty stable place myself and know when I get wobbly what that's about.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautifully said. So you went to this training and then you came back full of passion and wanting to tell everyone about it. So how did you go from that process of starting to speak at these various local venues to actually becoming trained as emotionally focused therapy?
Well, I started to go to everything I could, started to read everything I could. I listened to everything I could. I bought everything I could. I just jumped in.
Everything, right? Like every sort of media.
Absolutely. I talked it, ate it, you know, drank it. I was all over trying to learn for myself and helping others learn while I was doing that. So I just became passionate about it and took action on moving forward. So I don't know, you know.
Yeah. So initially you, right.
I became useful and helpful and showed up to things and tried to give help wherever I could and share the message. And, you know, that's important to show up in an organization. If you want to help, you want to be part of a leadership team or help in some sort of a way, then to show up and contribute is really important. And
right. Does emotionally focused therapy, does it sounds like it has its own organization?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. And then part of that, I am surmising it's like there's a training component to it.
Yeah. So it has a sort of whole certification program. So you can become a certified therapist and you can become a certified supervisor. And then based on organizational need, like you can become anyone who puts their mind to it can become a certified supervisor or certified therapist. As far as becoming a certified trainer, that's based on organizational need rather than desire and willpower, so to speak, because that's the organizational element of it. So there is a certification process to become a therapist and to become supervisors. And I really was part of helping. It was one of the kind of within the group of people that were out there doing training before there was exact system in place for how to become a trainer.
You were one of the early adopters.
Yes.
So what is the coolest place that you've ever done a training in?
So two places come to mind, really. And one of them is, so I think both of country and then I think of types of buildings or like big halls. Mm. I have both of those that come to mind. And so New Zealand is certainly one of the most exotic, gorgeous kind of places that I've been because it's one of the gorgeous, most beautiful places on the planet. Mm. So that was very exciting when I first started to do international training. I travel around the world now and do trainings throughout Europe and Eastern Europe and New Zealand and go around places. So New Zealand was one of my first international experiences, and it was so beautiful and so exotic, and being able to present throughout the North Island and the South Island and to kind of get to see a whole tour of New Zealand while I was there. And I continue to go back to New Zealand. So that's certainly a beautiful place on the planet. And it's hard to say my favorite place because I love the people that I'm connected to at all of these places, you know, and sharing the message is so exciting. But that was one of my kind of a benchmark experience as a young trainer, young in the organization, going out and going to New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand is definitely a place I want to get to at some point.
So that was really a highlight. And then I think another place was at a church that sponsored a training. And it was a really great big church outside of LA. Mm. So the training spot that we were at was what they use for their congregational meetings. And it was also kind of a first experience doing it within an environment like that. So it was new and it was exciting and it was a little scary. And then it was just beautiful. These rows and rows of the wooden pews, and there was a lot of natural wood and a lot of natural lighting. And yeah, it was just as far as a structure. And of course, the feel or the spirit, I guess, you know, that a congregation kind of brings into the room was really enchanting as well.
So yeah, there, I mean, it sounds
a
absolutely
beauty on
beautiful.
A different level. Yeah, it was building beauty, you
right,
know?
Right.
So that was a really kind of its own exotic experience, I think.
Yeah, that's really neat. You know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, a couple more like personal kind of things. So you do a lot of traveling. You mentioned all around the world, doing trainings everywhere. How do you balance that with just family time and personal time? And
well, I'm an empty nester, so that helps a lot. Although we have a large family and lots of grandchildren that we don't get to see enough of, I'm not sure that I do balance it, actually. So that's a really interesting question. And I asked somebody that myself the other day. And it seems to be important that we strive for balance. And yet we're on, I don't know, I feel balanced inside of myself because I feel very happy with what I'm doing. My relationships are good. I feel like I'm providing some meaning in the work that I do. And I have loving relationships around me. But if you really just looked at leisure time compared to work time, because I get so much enjoyment out of the work that I do that maybe I don't spend enough time off-roading or I live on the beach. And so, you know, we have the ocean view and we can walk up and down the beach. So I think the balance that I keep is building into my life things that I enjoy, making sure that I'm spending time doing things that are rejuvenating to me with people that I love around me and things that bring me a lot of purpose that the people behind me, my family members, are also behind me and working along with me. So I have several of our children that contribute and my husband that we do business things together. And so, you know, if you just broke down my day and said, do you work? How many hours of that are work? Then it'd probably say it doesn't look very balanced, but it feels really good.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it ultimately is more about contentment and purpose rather than structured X amount of hours doing this versus that.
Yeah, that's what I delude myself with anyway. And as long as people in my personal life aren't really complaining about it, then it doesn't seem too problematic.
That's a good barometer, right? You know, the last question I wanted to ask you was, what advice would you give to someone that eventually does want to become a trainer or even trained in any kind of theoretical model?
I just think that whatever, that teaching and having a voice and sharing messages is a really important thing to do. And it may not be a theory. It may be something else. I also like to do internet things, you know, so it's not necessarily just one passion that we have. But finding a way to have a voice and to teach, I think feeling that passion certainly gives so much meaning. So that would be identify a love that you have that you can share with others and then do some practice and study. It takes action, both in creating new experiences for ourselves. We learn that way. We help other people learn through experience as well. So taking action and then study, you know, combining those two are really important things. So identifying that passion and a way that you can serve. And I think teaching is a big service that's also very rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, especially for us as mental health clinicians, like we have so much to offer the world. And I think when we can realize that and when we can own that and be willing to share our voice and our perspective, it makes a difference.
Makes such a difference, even the ways that we can contribute in. And public speaking is difficult, I think, for many of us. So we can start small with workshops and groups and little presentations and even just getting our video up on our website or something. You know, there's ways that we can start to share messages. And I think the important identifying a message to share is really important. It makes our voice stronger. And as we have that strength, then we have a bigger impact.
Absolutely. Becca, how can folks get in touch with you?
So my website is RebeccaJorgensen.com. And that's kind of my professional website. And that's a great way to reach me. Of course, I'm on social media. So also you can find me on Facebook and on Twitter, I'm EFT Doc. So I'm doing a lot of social media as well. You can like Google me and you'll find me. It's easy.
Awesome. And I'll put all that on the show notes. Hey, what's up? Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Becca. That was such a fun conversation. You know, the biggest thing that I'm taking away is just this conversation I feel like was such a reminder that we have so many opportunities because of what we do as clinicians, whether that is doing full-time private practice or doing it some sort of part-time and then expanding into different areas like teaching and training and all of these things. And I love Rebecca's spirit, first of all, and I love just how open she was in talking about some of the things that she's had to deal with and some of the lessons that she's learned along the way. Rebecca mentioned numerous resources, and you can find those at sellingthecouch.com/session and the numbers 3-6. As I wrap up, I have been working on my podcast course, which has been a lot of fun, and I actually came up with the name. So it's called the healthcasters. So word, play on the word podcaster, but for the healthcasters. And so this will be a podcasting course and community for healthcare providers, for healers, and for coaches. And I know that having a lot of fun creating this course, I've recorded something like 27 or 28 how-to videos, little short ones, 5 to 10 minutes, to take you step by step from all the way from coming up with an idea for your podcast all the way to successfully launching it. And I'm so excited to be sharing it with you. I think it's going to be looking like it's going to come out here in the next 5 to 6 weeks or so. If this is something that you're interested in, please feel free to sign up to get notified when it goes out at sellingthecouch.com/mypodcast. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a splendid week.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.